When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It pains me every time I say
it. I know, it hurts you. Yeah. I can see the blood coming from your ears if it wasn't for your headphones.
Oh, dear. Oh, you're funny today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm all ready to go. I know what I want to talk about. I want to talk about salt. Because I feel like it's a very confusing subject, and here's why. There are so many things out there in our foods that are far more insidious than salt. You know, whether it's I just said you know, and you didn't run across the room and punch me.
Well, Paul put away the prod. We got to pull it out. We did. We had it out for last week.
Can you get on it?
I'll find.
Can you?
Well, I thought you had cured yourself.
Well,
it's
apparently
been weeks,
not, Janice.
It's been weeks since you had us with the prod.
Well, I'm telling you right now.
All right, no, we'll
that
dig it
one
out.
Can relapse at any time, so pay attention.
All right, we'll go get it.
There are far more insidious things in our food supply. From artificial sweeteners, artificial coloring, you know, I just said, you know, again, get over here and do something about it. MSG, and the list goes on. Salt, comparatively speaking, with those things, would seem harmless. It's a transient mineral. In other words, you eat it, you pee it out, you sweat it out. You eat it, you pee it out, you sweat it out. But in fact, having high amounts of salt in your body, ingesting high quantities of salt, is actually quite dangerous. It elevates blood pressure, makes people hypertensive, and it's been related to diabetes. It supposedly exacerbates the symptoms of diabetes. Dr. Van Hurley actually shared that with us on a previous show, which I'm very excited to be having her back a little later on. But in addition to that, it also helps the body produce cortisol, which is a stress hormone that stores belly fat. There's all kinds of health risks associated with high sodium levels. So it gets kind of confusing. It's like, well, do we need salt? Can we just cut salt out? Yes, we do need salt. Without salt, we will die. So like everything in life, this is a balance, and it's about having the proper information so that you can ingest salt in healthy quantities. Why do we need salt? It's an electrolyte. That's all it is. It's an electrolyte, and what it does is it maintains muscle function and hydration. Without salt, your blood cannot hold on to fluid. Your body cannot hold on to fluid. Now, the problem is when you get too much salt in the body, Your blood holds more water, which means your heart has to work harder and pump harder, which is why it elevates blood pressure. Mm. Did you know that?
No.
Now you do. Feel smarter already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I hate the feeling when my heart has to work harder. I hate that feeling. You can tell. You can just tell. It's different. It's different than a
pump. And it's not because you're running.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because you've ingested too much salt.
Yeah.
All right. But anyway, so here's what you need to look out for. Previously, the Institute of Medicine had said that we needed to consume no more than 2,300 milligrams a day. But now new studies are suggesting that a lower limit is better, 1,500 milligrams, which equals slightly more than a half a teaspoon of sodium a day. 1,500 milligrams. Here's the problem. The American diet, with all the processed foods that we ingest, it is laden with salt. Why? First of all, salt is a preservative. It functions as a preservative. But second of all, it masks a lot of the flavors that are created during the production and processing of processed foods. And in addition, it also improves the texture. It's very addictive, salt. People get addicted to salt. It's fascinating to me because I don't eat a lot of salt. And I have these baked corn chips that I eat sometimes with salsa. And they're called Guiltless Gourmet. They make them unsalted, and they make them with salt. And my assistant got me the wrong bag of chips one day. And it was I was like, oh, my God, this is gross. It tasted like a salt lick because my taste buds
have changed.
Yeah. I don't eat a ton of salt. So you have to condition your body. This is why the food industry has to reduce salt so slowly, because we become salt sensitive.
Well, it's like what Mark last week, when Mark was on the show.
Exactly.
So it's like that stealth health.
They have to gradually reduce sodium. But this is a big push right now to reduce sodium. So all the big food companies, Post, General Mills, they're all in the process of reducing sodium in their products. In addition, you've got a real big initiative with the American Heart Association, along with the city of New York and 30 other cities, promoting this national salt reduction program. National Salt Reduction Initiative. So, you know, people are concerned. They're looking at it saying, all right, how big of a deal is it? It's a big deal, but it's nothing that you need to freak out over tomorrow. You need to become mindful of how much sodium is in the foods that you're eating. I looked this up, and I thought this was kind of interesting. The saltiest burger in America. Take a guess how many grams of sodium this would have. It's the Jalapeno Smokehouse Bacon Burger at Chili's. Take a guess how many milligrams of sodium. Now, you're supposed to be eating 1,500 or 2,300 at most milligrams of sodium a day. This is one meal. Take a guess.
800
milligrams?
Yeah.
That's your guess? Okay. You suck at this game. Paul?
I'm going to say like 1,500.
You're also terrible. 6,700.
Oh, my God.
That's a heart attack and a sandwich right there. Your heart's just going to go boom.
6,700.
Yeah. Kaboom right there. So there's the problem. That's a big part of the problem. This is why our sodium has become so imbalanced. That's one example. I mean, then the saltiest breakfast, the Southern Fried Chicken Biscuit Platter. Talk about a heart attack on a bowl. Or on the border, it's a fast food Mexican place. The Grand Fajita Chicken Nachos. Take a guess.
Okay, well, now that you've said I sucked.
Now you know the game we're in,
7,000.
5,200 milligrams of sodium. So the problem is that all of our processed foods are extremely high in salt for the reasons that I mentioned before. In addition, one of the things that keeps our sodium levels in check is potassium. Potassium also helps to flush sodium out of the body. So potassium and sodium work in a kind of checks and balances. They're both electrolytes. But our diet has become so processed, you find potassium in fruits, vegetables, fish, lean proteins like avocado, spinach, melons, kiwi, bananas, halibut. But how many of us are eating that stuff? Most of us are waking up in the morning, going through the drive-thru, getting the 6,000 milligrams of sodium, you know, bacon, egg muffin, gross thing. And the day goes on with our frozen food and our packaged food and our food in a bag and our food in a can and our this and our that. We're not getting enough potassium to help keep the sodium levels in check. So it's adding insult to injury. We're not getting these natural sources of potassium, and our sodium is off the charts because of the processed foods. So what can you do? First of all, count your milligrams of sodium. Be mindful. Don't salt your food. There is no reason you should be adding salt to your food. None. Use natural herbs, natural spices. I put pepper on my food instead. You realize that pepper is antimicrobial. It fights off bugs in the body. It helps aid in digestion. There's all kinds of stuff that you can put on your food, salt-free seasonings that have health benefits. I wrote a book called Master Your Metabolism Cookbook, and in it I talk about all of the health benefits of your food and in the seasonings that you put on your food, salt not being one of them. There are a million different things you can put on your food to add flavor that have health benefits that aren't going to send your sodium skyrocketing through the roof. Drink water. It helps flush out sodium. Get natural sources of potassium. And let's say, for example, that you're not having the halibut and the spinach or the banana for breakfast. One of the things that I used to do with Biggest Loser contestants, there was a drink called Electromix, a little natural drink in a green packet. It looks sort of like Emergency, even though it is not the same product. And I would have the contestants put it in their water bottle so I could make sure that they were getting 800 milligrams of potassium. They would do two a day, one in the morning and one at night, because they were constantly sweating through working out all day long and drinking tons and tons of water. So balancing their electrolytes was really important. And with that, getting that potassium in there, I would get that Electromix in there to make sure that when they were working out really hard, they had enough potassium. So if you're an advanced athlete and you're in the gym and you're sweating for hours, you're not having enough chance to get natural sources of potassium, you could go with a supplement of that nature. Again, cut back on processed foods. And then last but not least, I can't stress this enough. Just eat natural, clean food. Whole grains, lean proteins, fruits and vegetables. It's the processed junk that's where we get into trouble. That's where what's throwing everything off. We were never having these conversations. You know, our grandparents didn't used to have these conversations. They would eat eggs for breakfast and steak for dinner, and they would have vegetables. And now food doesn't even resemble food. I don't even know what it is anymore. It's like it's chemicals. It's food science.
But don't you ever crave, don't you ever get a craving for salt?
No, I'm not a salt girl. Well, I've never understood it. I'm a sweet girl. I'm a sugar girl, unfortunately for me.
But what do you do? Like, for example, I'm like you. I don't add salt. I don't, don't eat a lot of processed food. But sometimes, especially when Aunt Flo comes to town, sometimes I need salt. So I do. Once a month, I buy a big bag. And I know it's wrong, but I feed that urge and then I let it go. Sometimes you just got to feed
the urge. How crazy are you going with this?
Well, I'm just saying, sometimes our bodies crave, my body, I won't speak for anybody else, but I have talked to other gals.
Oh,
there's the craving.
You're holding a town hall meeting.
Yes.
How much salt are you consuming at that time of the month? I am having massive quantities of salt.
Just sometimes you do crave it.
I think it's about moderation. So, for example, Pop Chips. This is a company that I've been invested in. We're working to naturally reduce the sodium. I think it's like 300 milligrams of sodium in a serving, which is 100 calories. It's high. I mean, is it thousands of milligrams of sodium?
No.
Would I like to see it a little bit lower? Sure. And, hopefully in January of 2012, we're going to make that announcement that we've cut the sodium in half. But I think 300 milligrams in a snack, there's salt. That's enough salt. Trust me. That salt is going to be plenty. You don't need 6,000 milligrams of salt in a meal. You could have a 100 calorie bag of Pop Chips, 300 milligrams of salt. It's going to taste like salt. It doesn't taste like sweet, but it's not thousands of milligrams.
And looking at one time,
in one sitting. So you go, okay, I had 300 milligrams of sodium right now. What a worst case scenario, I've got 2,300 milligrams of sodium to play with today. I got 2,000 left for my breakfast, my lunch, my dinner. If you had the Pop Chips as a snack, it's about balancing. And if you have it in that one meal, you don't have it in all three other meals that day, and you don't salt the foods, and you make sure you get the potassium-laden foods in there when you do have the salt to keep it balanced, because it is dangerous. We do need to moderate our sodium. Come on, here's a statistic for you. Where is it? I wrote it down, and of course I lose it. Ah! Thank you so much. More than 20% of American men between 35 and 44 have high blood pressure. That's a lot. 35 to 44? That's young. Yeah. High blood pressure at 35 to 44? And it's because the salt is through the roof. So you can have a bag of Pop Chips when you're cranky.
Is that what you call it?
Cranky. When you're feeling a little cranky. Yeah. Whatever. How much time do I have to do my next segment?
Well, you got to be because Dr. V's coming on today.
Yeah, I know.
And you know what she's talking about?
What?
Oh, it's going to be good this time.
What's she talking about?
Poo.
What?
Remember a long time ago when Dr. V...
Look at your face.
I'm so excited.
You're ear to ear.
I'm so excited. Well, okay, we shouldn't call it poo. We could call it... It's going to be an NP.
Poop.
No, we could call it what comes out of you. Maybe. You know what? The reason I'm so excited...
What comes out of you? Well, that could go a million different directions, now, couldn't it, Janice?
No, it's just... It's important to... That's a very... Remember she talked about how important... Remember? Don't you... How come you're looking at me like that?
I'm fascinated. We're going to have a whole segment on...
It's not just poo, but it's kind of poo. To be able to understand your poo, to know what you should be doing, and your pee.
When is that coming up?
Right, as soon as you stop talking.
Look at you, Janice. It's like this, shut up. Shut up. Shut up. I must know about the poop and the pee.
The reason I want to know is because I saw a Biggest Loser episode once, and I know that you know that I don't usually watch it.
Well, who does? And,
but I did see one where you jumped off a building, and I'd like to know what happened in your
space
suit.
We're going to take a break. In my space suit?
Whatever that thing you were wearing. You jumped off some building.
And you're implying that I pooped myself.
Well, it sure sounded like it.
Okay.
Did you watch
Dr.
the show?
V is going to come back.
No, you're going to talk some more first. You're going to talk a little bit
more. You just told me to stop talking.
No, but I want you to talk some more, a little bit more.
Oh.
But we can still take a little breather. I'm just preparing you for the poo segment.
Fine. All right. I'm prepared for the poo segment.
Okay.
I did not, by the way, defecate in my spacesuit when I jumped off of the building.
Well.
I will say, though, that there is a show with a British woman named Gillian McKeith, and I think it's called You Are What You Eat. She has the people she's working with go to the bathroom in a... I can't get through anything. With a straight face.
I just wasn't sure where you were going with it.
They go to the bathroom in a little plastic tub. I swear on my life. She is a this woman is a perfect. We should break. We should probably break. Let's regroup.
No, please tell me about the other Jillian.
No.
Okay, you can't just say she has them poop in a cup and that's the end of the
thing. She does.
But then what does she do
with it? Well, then they look at it and they analyze it.
On TV?
Yeah, man. It's so gross. And they look at, like, the texture, the color, if it's connected, you know, if it's a long thing or if there's pebbles. I'm serious. It is a thing, I'll have you know. There's a lot that you're supposed to be able to know. It's a whole show. It's a whole show about it.
No, I think it's important to talk about, but I
didn't know
that they...
NBC had wanted, a while back when I was doing Losing It, they brought that up in the room, and they were like, you know, we love what that Jillian McKeith does with the poop. And I was like, oh, over my rotting body. Can you see me pouring over a steaming pile of poop with somebody trying to... Listen, I want to talk to you about the sodium in your food and the color of your poop. I thought... But we are going to do that today, aren't we, Janice? Because that's what you planned for me. Because I knew somebody would get me somewhere.
No.
NBC didn't get it, but you sure got it.
Oh, well, I thought we're doing a podcast here. It's not a visual medium.
Mm.
It's an audio medium. I didn't realize that there's actual show where they showed it. I couldn't handle that.
No. It's a lot. Okay.
Oh, my God.
So, all right, we're going to take a break and regroup and then figure out what the hell we're going to do next.
I took us off course. I'm so sorry. I got so excited about your space suit. Whatever the hell you're wearing.
Okay.
God, I'm laughing like a dirty old man.
Paul, can you cut?
Yeah, we'll come back. I hold on so nervously to me and my drink. I wish it was cool in me, but so far has not been good. It's been shitty, and I feel awkward as I should. This club has got to be the most pretentious thing since I thought you and me. Well, I am imagining a dark lit place, or your place, or my place. Well, I'm not paralyzed.
Janice can hardly wait for Dr. Van Hurley to come on with the next top seven. So, with no further ado, Dr. V, are you there?
I'm here.
Dr. V.
Janice is ecstatic. I can't. She's like a little kid. So, Dr. V, the top seven today is it's potty humor, apparently. Talk to me.
So, top seven things in your toilet. Jillian, it's really important. It's embarrassing. You've got the people that are the toilet checker-outers. And
the toilet checker-outers! Talk to me about this, because I guess this is a thing.
It's an animal, and it's not really cocktail or dinner conversation, but there are people that check what they've done before they flush and those that don't. And it really is two different groups. And what I actually say is, we should all be checking what we've done.
Really?
Yeah, it's really important because think about it. What comes out of our body, and we're going to talk about some urine issues and some stool issues.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, number one and number two, and we'll start with number one.
Okay.
So what comes out tells us about our metabolism and what's happening in our body. So you've
really?
Got to make a note. Yep.
So, okay, I'm ready. Yep. Oh, gosh, now I'm going to be one of those toilet checkers. That's not sexy, Dr. V.
It's totally not sexy. But you know what? For moms, for kids, for dads,
all right.
Look at your kids' poo. Same thing. Take a look. Every once in a while, go in there and take a look what's going on, because
okay.
you got to teach your kids what's going on with their
body. Right, I'm ready. All right. I need to be convinced here. I'm ready to be convinced. But per usual, you always succeed in convincing me.
Well, let's see. These are simple ones, but actually, we need to do it. So
okay.
number one, we're going to start with number one. So
okay.
urine. So the first on the top seven is you've got to look at the color of your urine. And it really sounds basic, but we have people that have an absolutely clear urine, and that's a sign of really good hydration, meaning that they taken enough fluid all day, their kidneys can excrete everything simply. And when I say clear, it really still has a little bit of that yellowish tinge, but they're good, good hydrators. And that is a really good sign. That's what we're looking for. But
okay.
then we have the other ones who have a darker urine. Now, we can get that from different medicines, like people that have a bladder infection and they take medicines for spasm. They can get almost like a red urine. But you can get actually Coca-Cola colored urine if you have liver disease, bile disease, like bilirubin problems, and if you're not well hydrated, the urine looks darker and darker.
Okay.
So patients really need to look at a gauge, and it is so critical because none of us actually are hydrating well enough. If
okay.
you're getting that dark urine and then it starts to smell a little more, you've got to hydrate, and you can be your own little laboratory scientist because you can look at it every time and see as you hydrate, it is getting more to that light yellow kind of color.
So what if you take, here's a question, I'm sorry, Dr.
Yeah,
V, I always
sure.
do this to you for my own personal edification, but what if you take vitamins and your
yeah.
pee is like fluorescent? The interpretation is you don't want it to be brown colored.
Yeah, so radioactive pee, right?
Yes.
So especially, so it looks like toxic waste.
Maybe I am looking just a little bit.
Very yellow, and actually people with liver disease, because of the bilirubin, can have that higher look. But that's because of normal elements in the vitamins. So
okay.
multivitamin pee, you can still gauge it because you can have it really, really dark yellow, again, that radioactive color, and you
okay.
can still have a funny tinge to it, but it's lighter. So good point, Jillian. As always, vitamins do color the urine in a different way, but you still see the spectrum. You still see that dark, dark yellow, weird kind of greeny yellow versus a lighter greeny yellow.
Gotcha.
That's a good thing.
Okay.
I mean, that means that you're still hydrating well.
Okay.
So number two, now blood in your urine, and it's a different issue, in my opinion, for men and women, and that's why I want to talk about
really?
It. So if you are a woman, and especially a menstruating woman, what can happen is you can, of course, during the time of your periods, see blood in there.
Right.
But here's the thing. It's really important to know that even with other vaginal infections, vaginal dryness, where you will actually get some sloughing of cells, so
Oof.
This is even for postmenopausal women,
okay.
blood in the urine is a really important sign. And why it's important is because you want to know, is there something else going on intravaginally that maybe needs to be treated, and that has to do with vaginal dryness or even bladder issues.
Bladder infection, right.
And something else, and we're going to switch over to men. So men, because they don't have periods, I mean, we're the lucky ones that get those.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, lucky.
And
lucky
exactly.
being the word, right.
So for men, it's really super important if they see any kind of blood-tinged urine, and that's because they don't have a vagina, they don't have normally any blood excreting, and they can have bladder infections with blood. But what's more important is if it doesn't clear. So every time, men and women, that you get a bladder infection and you saw some blood, you want to make sure you get a second urine test from your doc to see, is it cleared? And if you see remaining red blood cells, especially as a man, where you can't, there's really no other reason you should have it, you have to think of bladder polyps, bladder cancer, prostate issues, and others. So, again, remaining red blood cells for a man, even after a cleared infection or maybe a prostate infection, and for women not on their period who've been treated, let's say, properly for any vaginal problems or bladder infections, persistent urine red blood cells are really important to track. Because I had a classic patient in a male that I was taking care of, a diabetic patient, one day, just once, had peed out blood and basically said it wasn't painful, there was nothing else, and it never happened again. We got him straight to the scanner. We looked at his ultrasound of his bladder. He had a big polyp. It was bladder cancer.
Wow.
He treated and effectively, touch wood, cured. And so it's a really important thing to not ignore blood.
Okay. Got
okay?
it. Yeah.
Now, we're going to go to number two, okay? So this is the harder one because people don't want to see it. Again, these are the rapid flushers that turn around and flush even before they get off the toilet. And I would say, please give yourself a little break and peek down there, you know, before you flush.
Okay. I'm not going to laugh. I am not going to allow myself to be immature.
Right.
I am going to focus on the seriousness of this, and I'm not going to giggle. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. V.
Poo is important. It's like reading tea leaves. You got to read the poo in the toilet.
Oh, shoot. So, Janice, so, don't giggle.
I know. I'm just going to turn away.
Janice, we're doing a serious show. I'm sorry. Poo is tea leaves. I'm ready.
So, the number three in the top seven things in your toilet, and that has to do with our feces, you know, our stool, is do your stools float or not? Are they floaters or sinkers? And it's funny, right, as we all
know,
think.
I'm dying. Okay, is it floaters or sinkers?
Think about it. It's really important because people who have a really good fiber intake, who do really well in terms of getting enough healthy vegetables and fruits and fiber, whole grains and all that, they have floaters. Your poo really should be a nice, firm poo that floats in the toilet, well-formed, looks like little logs. I'm going to use all the descriptions of poo.
Okay.
But basically, it means you have good fiber. When you start
floaters.
To see these soft and squishy poos, you can see it for people who basically don't eat fruits and vegetables.
Janice looks terrified right now. You're not a floater,
no,
are you, Janice?
But Dr. V, what I'm surprised is you think it would be the opposite.
I thought it was going to be the opposite, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you
want
to have a nice, you know, a good poo that actually comes out like a little log. It's floating around. It's full of all those, you know, cellulose and things that our body can't break down, and it makes it float more. Soft,
wow.
Sticky poos, that probably is a sign of a couple things, which, again, is not enough fiber. And then sometimes in patients who have other problems, and we'll get to some of those, but even people who drink too much alcohol, which is really important, you start to see these piecemeal kind of poo.
Ooh.
They're slimy and sticky. And,
oh, dear God.
Yeah.
So
you
gotta
be careful. And,
no
and you know
dating
what?
Alcoholics for me.
Your body is telling you, hey, there's something going on here.
Okay.
Top seven, number four. So the fourth thing that we talk about is when you have really loose stools. So obviously, when we're talking about this, there's a spectrum. There's full-blown diarrhea. People know this, the Montezuma's Revenge, all of that. And it's really important, right? We know that. You already don't feel well. This is kind of a simpler one. But the idea is if you consistently have diarrhea, very loose stools, you've got to get checked for other kinds of infection in the stool, and it can be treated, and sometimes you actually have to be on an antibiotic course because you're having problems with really watery, really foul-smelling stool that you can see is not clearing up. It's usually infectious. Sometimes there are some other reasons for it. We talk about things like rice water stool. How about that one for a description? And that's what we learn in medical school. Rice water stool is the classic stools you see in underdeveloped countries for cholera. Now, we don't expect most of our listeners to have anything like that, but again, when you have a really thin, watery kind of stool, for some people, they've gotten so used to it, you've got to be careful. You've got to think, is there an obstruction? Is there an infection?
Okay.
You have a dumping syndrome, meaning you're not absorbing higher in the GI tract. Really important to bring that to the attention of your physician because you may need to get endoscopy or stool testing.
Wow. Okay.
Number five, if you have a whitish, light-colored, tan-colored, greasy stool.
This is my nightmare, Dr.
And there's a greasy ring, and it happens before you expect it. People will tell me. I've never thought anything of it. And, in fact, some of these stools do float because they're eating healthy, but they have, these patients have malabsorption. And we can actually check what we call fecal fat. So what that means is that there's something going on, whether it's through the biliary tract or in the GI tract itself, whether it's from stomach, small bowel, all the way to the big bowel, the colon, something is stopping the absorption and degradation of especially fats, lipids, in the stool. And it literally is a greasy, pretty smelly, actually, stool. But that's a sign of malabsorption. And we call that a fecal fat, meaning, again, fat in the stool issue, really important that if you start getting that and you're noticing it over and over, you've got to get your doc to actually do a quick fecal fat study to see what is the amount and what's going on. We sometimes see that in people who have obesity. We sometimes see it in people with liver disease. We see it in diabetes, prediabetes, and we see it in all kinds of other malabsorption problems, occasionally in patients who have the gluten problems, like celiac disease. So fecal fat, if that greasy stool, that's number five.
Okay.
Let's go to number six. So for stool, like in urine, we talk about blood. And this is the classic call you'll get. And it's two questions. It's either I see blood in the stool, like hanging around the little logs of stool. I mean, I'm describing it. Or little drips in the toilet that the water becomes pink colored. Or they'll actually say something else, which is I have dark stool, dark or tarry stool. So let's start with the dark or tarry colored stool. Very commonly, patients that have had to take Pepto-Bismol, I mean, it's even written on, you know, the bottle, you will get probably about a day to a day and a half later a black stool. That's not old blood. But the other reason you can get dark tarry stool is actually old blood. And you'll see that in patients who have, let's say, an ulcer in their stomach,
okay,
or not. You'll see it with a polyp in the colon. You can see it potentially with colon cancer.
Wow.
Some people only have gastritis. They have heartburn, and they have an inflamed stomach, but they're oozing out blood. And as blood breaks down, we see dark, tarry stools. You have to know about that. So if you're not taking Pepto and you see that, you got to let somebody know about that. The other part is a very common one, beets. I have to mention it because beets will give you what looks like a really bright red magenta kind of stool, and that usually happens the day after eating them. So very common, you'll get the panic call.
Janice and I both look at each other.
I love beets.
I've seen that. I remember I ate a bunch of beets, and my pee was pink, and I was panicked. I thought I was dying, and I was like, wait a minute.
And people do, and the water, right, the bowl water gets even what looks like blood-tinged, right?
Yeah, I thought I was, I literally was like, somehow I've managed to get an insane bladder infection that I had no idea, and then I was like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
I had a beet salad. It took me a second.
There you go. And so then the other things that you have to worry about just with those drips of blood we talked about,
right,
or just that blood around the stool, is hemorrhoids and fissures. They're very, very common. A fissure is just like, you know how you sometimes get a little sore on the side of your mouth, like a little cut, like, you know, we call it chelitis. You can get little sores around your anus as well.
Oh, God! I'm horrified. I have nightmares.
This is terrible.
How do you make this not happen? Janice is in the corner banging her head into the wall. Bet you, are you excited about this now, Janice? Fissures around your anus. Are you giddy? Are you jumping up and down now?
They're dry cracks around the anus that drag some blood. And we have some remedies that you can put some suppositories with glycerin, sometimes stool softeners. Some people are really prone to this. We don't know if it has to do with anal tone or what it's about. But basically that poo, if you will, is squeezed out through the last part of the anus, and it's dragging some of that, you know, inflamed blood and tissue into the bowl.
Oh my gosh.
And that is generally,
I could never be a doctor. I could never. I don't know how you do it.
You could. But
no. Let's be clear.
You could. And you know what? I bet you your listeners, and even yourselves maybe, all listening now, have somebody somewhere is experiencing this at this very moment. Mm-hmm. All these top sevens are so common.
Okay.
So we'll go to the last one. So the number seven, which is a really important one, like critically important one, is a change in the stool size or caliber. So what does that mean? That means if you used to have, and I'm going to be descriptive,
okay,
sausage-like stools that looked like, you know, basically nice formed little links that come out, you know, the good fiber in them and all that.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, you have stools that look thinner. That's the caliber. Like, they're like as thin as a pencil. Some people say, and I don't want to say this the wrong way,
okay,
it's like you had dog poo, and now you're having cat poos. You know how they're different?
Okay. Oh, I totally know what
you
mean.
No, I get it. I know. So, I'm following you. That's a great analogy.
It's descriptive, but if that changes, you've got to go see your internist, family doctor, and generally, we actually take that very seriously because what that can mean is that there's a bend somewhere in the colon that can be just from a benign polyp, which is just a growth that can be removed, but occasionally, it's a sign actually of colorectal cancer. So you have to be really careful about that. That's why it's number seven, because people will ignore it, and all of a sudden...
Never think anything of that, frankly.
Exactly. So one day you're pooing like a dog, and the next day you're pooing like little cat poos, like little pieces, and you're like, this is funny, because you don't feel any symptoms, nothing different, but you start noticing week by week in the bowl that you're not actually pooing the way you did anymore.
Wow.
Really important to bring that attention to your gastroenterologist, your internist, any doctor that you see will know when you say it's actually changed in the size. And the medical term is caliber, but it just means it was a bigger poo. Now it's like a little skinny poo. The caliber.
I have Great Dane caliber poo. This is Janice. This is technical stuff, man.
You're learning it. And so what we do is, again, that harkens back to the whole thing about the poo issue, and that is, when do you screen? We get that question all the time. When do you get your first colonoscopy? Colonoscopies, where they actually take that scope that has the camera that goes up your, you know, up your bum in your rectum and goes up and looks through the colon. Really, this is one of the best preventive studies we have. It saves lives. Mm. For most of my patients, I recommend it somewhere between 40 and 45 years old. But I have to say, that's with the caveat that a lot of healthcare institutions and national recommendations say to start at 50. Personally, and I'm just telling everybody my personal opinion, is start earlier.
Really?
Get this done earlier because it is such a well-tolerated study. People get a little nervous the night before because they have to take the prep. So
yes,
that they're pooing and pooing and pooing. And by the way, that's going to be all diarrhea, kind of watery stool, which is normal, but you're cleaning out. Do the study. You don't have to do it usually between 4 and 5 years in follow-up.
Okay.
If you have a family history, definitely you want to do it by the age of 40.
I've heard that. Okay, so if you have a family of colon cancer, you definitely need to get in there by 40.
Absolutely. In fact, we have 35-year-olds. If it's I have families where it's, you know, literally it's more than one family member, we get them in early. Very rare cases of even kids that have things like familial polyposis, those kids have to be screened with endoscopy, colonoscopy, even at a young age. But that's rare. What I'm saying in general is just good preventive health screening. You know, same thing. Men, get your prostates checked. Women, do your breast exams, do your mammograms at the right age, do your pap smears, and get your colonoscopy. Don't be afraid to do it.
Got it. Dr. V, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
A brave soul engaging in this conversation with our motley crew over here.
It's not so scary, and there wasn't a lot of giggling, because guess what? It's really serious, isn't it?
I tried not to. I was like, I am not going to allow myself to get uncomfortable and giggle, especially because I could tell that you were very serious about it. And then I thought, you know what, for somebody at home who is having these symptoms and, you know, needs to go to the doctor, I don't want to act like a child from my own insecurity and make them feel uncomfortable and have them not go to their doctor. So that I was like, shut up, Jillian. Because, you know, you just get you get insecure and you get uncomfortable and you like giggle about it. And it sounds so painful. But then, you know, it is obviously so incredibly important. And so,
really important.
The chuckles that Janice and I did make, Janice, apologize.
No, they're good. I mean, think about it. When you as a pediatrician, you always ask the moms and dads, how are they pooing? You know, what does the diaper look like? You know, is it that green mushy stuff? Because babies have different poo, so we're not applying this to infants.
Oh, dear God. Is this what I have to look forward to?
Yeah,
is the baby's poo
absolutely.
Green and mushy?
And you've got to look at their poo, and you've got to see what it's like. And that's what
you expect. Gosh.
Once we become adults, it's like we don't want to talk about it. But guess what? We have a lifetime of pooing. Pooing is good.
Wow. Okay. Pooing is good. Pooing is good. That's going to be my new mantra. What do you live by? Pooing is good.
Pooing is good.
Yeah, we're into pooing.
And look at your poo. And look at number one and number two.
I hope you have a high caliber of poo, Dr. Van Hurley.
There you go. Okay. Thank you, Jillian.
Thanks, Dr. V. Have a great day.
Thank you all. Bye.
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 Janice. You have high caliber poo?
No, you know what? I think, to be honest, you know what? Yeah. I was much more mature than you during this interview.
What are you talking about? That's because you were hiding in the corner.
No.
I saw you burying your face in the corner.
No, because that's because I looked at you because you became a 7-year-old little girl.
You turned into a wee little girl. I did not. Yeah. I was like, this is important stuff.
It is important.
Anal fissures and things. And I.
No, I think if it wasn't for me during this interview, it could have gone awry.
I think I steered
the ship on this one.
Oh, that is the farthest thing from the truth. Oh, okay, sure. There's a pig flying right by, Janice. There it goes. Hey there, Charlotte. Hey there. What's the name of that pig in that movie? Was Charlotte the spider or the pig? Charlotte was the spider. What's the name of that pig?
Charlotte's what?
Charlotte's the spider. What's the name? Oh, Lord.
Babe.
Okay. It's probably break time.
It is break
time.
Babe.
Wilbur. Nobody on the road. Nobody on the beach. I feel it in the air. The summer's out of reach. Empty lake, empty streets. The sun goes down alone. I'm driving by. Okay, we're taking calls right now, and we have Dee on the line. Hey, Dee, you there?
Hi, Jillian. Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, buddy. What's going on?
Well, I just have a question on how to deal with my family.
How much time do you have, Dee? Do we have years to do therapy for you? Because it's taken me years. But go ahead. Tell me, what's going on?
Well, I have several sister-in-laws who are into the embracing your fatness, I guess you can say, and loving the curves and the body that God gave you.
Okay.
And at the same time, they're all just unhappy, unhealthy. Several of them are trying to get pregnant.
Oh,
and they
dear.
Can't.
Well, no, and, no, not when you're overweight. It's very, very difficult. Yeah.
And I want, how can I help them without thoroughly insulting them?
Okay, so let me clarify really quick. So I'm going to presume that you're in good shape.
Yes.
Okay, and you've got a couple sister-in-laws. When you say embracing their curves, there's a big difference between curves and obesity. It's like we're talking, you know, Beyonce versus heart attack. Am I looking at a Beyonce here, or am I looking at I'm 100 pounds overweight?
Most of them, several of them are well over 100 pounds overweight.
Okay, yeah, that's not curve. That's called morbid obesity. And the reason we use the word morbid is because it is life-threatening. Now, I'm going to tell you a problem that you have. If these are not women that are desiring change, you cannot help them. So we start there. If they are not in a position of saying, I want to be healthier, I don't know where to start, that's an opening. If you don't have that opening, the odds are against you. I can tell you how to manipulate the situation and hopefully shift it in your favor, but it would help a lot if you have that opening. Do you have that opening?
No.
No. Okay.
But so, they complain all the time.
About?
About the fact that they can't get pregnant.
and can't get pregnant. But are they complaining about the fact that they can't get pregnant or the fact that they're overweight?
Both. Yeah.
Both. Okay.
But they refuse to blame it on what it's all about.
Well, yeah. Fertility is a tricky thing. I'll be honest with you. Fertility is a very tricky thing right now. In fact, you know, having experienced issues with fertility myself, having multiple friends of mine in with fertility doctors who are fit, it is a complicated issue. Although you're right, when you're morbidly obese, fat functions like a hormone and it inhibits the body's ability to get pregnant. There is no doubt about it. But with that said, you don't necessarily, many people who are fit are having fertility issues right now, and it has to do with the chemicals in our foods, in our environment, and how we are constantly under assault with toxins. So that is playing a factor. So we can't just create a sweeping generalization and say fat people can't get pregnant. Many, many people are having issues with that. So you need to be careful about that when you talk with them. I want you to put the pregnancy thing aside right now. If they are turning around and complaining about their weight, and you turned around and said, you know, I'm happy to help you lose the weight, what would be the response?
I'm not sure. They're into this. We just love ourselves the way we are, but we're very unhappy with ourselves.
Okay.
Does that make any sense at all?
No, I don't understand it. So they're saying that they're happy being overweight, or they're saying we're unhappy being overweight, or they're saying both at different times?
They're trying to convince themselves that they're okay with it.
Got it. All right. So then oftentimes I think what will happen when people do that is there's a sense of hopelessness when it's like, I want to be clear though. I never want anyone that's overweight to be ashamed. That is not what this is about. But it's about acknowledging that it's unhealthy. And in order to live your best life, i.e. get pregnant or see your children's children graduate from college, being morbidly obese is not going to lend itself to a healthy, happy lifestyle. So it's not about not loving yourself in the moment. It's not about believing that you have value and beauty, because all human beings do, no matter what their shape or size. It doesn't become about loving yourself. It becomes about taking responsibility for your health so that you have a long life with children and grandchildren that you can play with and be active with. So I think that you need to be very careful about if you were to engage in this, which I think is dangerous territory, but if you were to engage in this, you first need to stress that you need to play into that, because that they are beautiful exactly where they're at right now, that they're beautiful no matter what size, no matter what shape. Then there needs to be a shift in thinking that even though, you know, they're beautiful big, they're beautiful small, they're beautiful people inside and out, that health is a different ballgame. And the next time there's a complaint about weight, the door will crack in that moment. And that's when you can stick your foot in the door, okay, and say simply this. Listen, a little validation. I love what you guys are doing with, you know, reaffirming that you're beautiful at any size, because you are. But if you guys want to have a conversation about losing weight for health, you know, to help with pregnancy, or issues of that nature, I would be more than happy to help you understand calories and you know, get you started on a workout program, or help you buy a couple of DVDs, or to go walking with you, you know, a few days a week. And then if you get the door slammed on your foot, take it out and stay away. If they open the door a little bit more and engage you, there's your opening. And then it becomes a positive, affirming information game. Not a game of you're not beautiful like this, or you can't get pregnant like this, or you're messed up like this, or you're wrong or need to be fixed. A lot of people that deal with morbid obesity have heard their entire lives that they need to be fixed. There's a good possibility that the parent involved was concerned and, you know, weighed them or thought about getting them into a regimen. Or it's like, what do we do about Annie? You know, I can't tell you how many parents come to me. I don't know what to do about my daughter. I don't know what to do about my son. But even though it's, you know, in the parent's mind, it's coming from concern, the truth of the matter is it's coming from insecurity on the parent's part of thinking, what are people going to think about me as a parent if I've got an overweight kid? And then the kid interprets it as, I've got to be fixed. I've got to be changed. Mom is ashamed of me. Dad is ashamed of me. And they rebel. And they take on a message of, I'm unlovable as is. So if you come into it with the, we got to fix you, we got to get you better, they're going to reject the hell out of you. So you have to make it their idea. And the next time they bring up any discontent with the weight, that's when you go in and say, you know, I'm really loving, again, I reiterate, really loving this whole thing that you guys are doing about loving where you're at now, because it's really important that you accept where you are now because you're beautiful in any shape or size. But if you decide that you want to pursue this for health reasons, you know, to see if it helps with pregnancy, I'm here for you. Does that make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense, yeah.
And now here's the bigger question, though. Why do you care?
I care because they are wonderful women.
Okay.
It also, truly, it bothers me because I get little jabs from them about my fitness.
Okay.
And I don't even know how to explain it, but insults and how easy it is for me and stuff like that. At the same time, while they're complaining about how it's so hard for them, but, you know, I spent an hour and a half on the treadmill last night,
mm-hmm.
and it's difficult for me, but I refuse to make excuses.
Have you
and
said that?
It's excuses and sass and complaints. They complain all the time.
Okay. Two things. You need to do two things. Okay, and to take this one step further for my own curiosity, why do their quips and little snippy remarks bother you?
Because they've all made fun of my husband in the past when he was overweight, and so he did something about it. And it's just a really difficult spot because it's not easy for us, and we try really hard, and we're both very fit now. But they make excuses and excuses and excuses, and yet they complain and bitch and moan because they're unhealthy. But they make excuses in the same breath.
You still didn't really answer it, though. Why do you care what they think?
I don't know, Julian.
Not a good answer. Try again.
They're my family.
Keep going.
I don't.
Keep going.
Maybe I should just not care.
Yeah, you shouldn't care. You shouldn't care what other people think about you. That's their business, not yours. So you've got two issues here. One, I told you how to handle and manage.
Right.
Okay? The second one is, if you cannot handle and manage it, it becomes a boundary game. So the next time they make a quip to you or they say something snotty or they say something snide, you need to say, you know, you guys, I find this so frustrating, and it's kind of hurtful to me, because I love you, and when you say this, it makes me feel alienated and frustrated. So let's not engage in these conversations. And, you know, unless you ever want to come to me and talk to me about, you know, I'm happy to work out with you, I'm happy to do whatever you want, but right now, you know, when you make comments like that, it makes me feel alienated from the family. I know it makes my husband feel alienated from the family, and it's frustrating to us, and it's hurtful to us. So let's not engage in these conversations. And it's a boundary game. You stop trying to change them and have them stop trying, being passive aggressive with you. You got to gently say it, and you got to establish boundaries. And you might want to say, listen, this is hard for us. We work really hard for it at this. And it's important to us. So when you say that, it negates all that we do to work for it. It negates that we make health a priority in our life. And it makes me feel like you're negating me as a person and my husband as a person and the efforts we make and the things that we're about. And I feel alienated from you. So let's not engage in this. So if you don't get option number one of the foot in the door moment to make progress, we then move to option number two, which is healthy boundaries. And if they are going to come along, they'll come along because you're leading by example, and at some point they're inspired by what you guys are doing. And if they're not, they're not. If they don't ever come around, then they don't ever come around. And there were times in my life with people that I tried to help that I couldn't bring around. And the reality is, I learned a long time ago The ones I couldn't help and I couldn't change had nothing to do with me or my abilities. It had everything to do with who they were and where they were at that moment in time. And I took my knowledge and my energy and I put it into myself and the people that were receptive to change. And that's it. And it doesn't mean that you don't love them, and it doesn't mean that they're not a part of your life. It means that you have boundaries. We have boundaries with loved ones. There are not relationships that are perfect, you know? And when you're in a situation like this, you got to be real conscious about why this is affecting you. Do your own work. Don't try to change them. Focus that energy on yourself. And if there's a place where you guys can come together and have a meeting of the minds, wonderful. If not, you set boundaries and you focus on you and your husband.
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. And then Facebook me and let me know how it turned out.
I will. All right. Thank you. And my husband says making the cut is awesome. He's enjoying it.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad he likes it. It's a tough program. I'm so mean.
I always walk in and he's muttering, "She's trying to kill me."
I hear that all the time.
That's funny, really.
And you can let him know that I am.
Okay.
Thank you, buddy. Have a great day.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, she was really a sweet caller.
I've had enough of you today.
I know you have. I am
sick to death of you. I cannot look at your face, you smug expression.
Yeah, but you still bought me a sandwich today.
Yes, you did.
Yes, you did.
That means you like me.
No, what it means is I'm concerned about labor laws. That's what it means. And as I've said before,
I am all filled up in the lawsuits.
I think you do have some caring for me somewhere inside. I think you think that Janice is a nice gal.
I don't, especially not with that accent. Especially not.
Okay.
Dear God.
See you next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Lights go out and I can't be seen. Tides that I tried to swim against.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.